Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary. Not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, and welcome to the Morning Show podcast. We have another big show for you. Delta Goodrum, the fabulous Delta, is here to tell us about her new album. And Stone the Flame and Crows, Ray Marr, drops by as Home and Away celebrates a massive new honour. But first, reality TV royalty Bethany Frankel is best remembered as a Real Housewife of New York. But now she's throwing out the rule book with a big new TV gig.
Well, Bethany Frankel is no shrinking violet, and why should she be? After chasing a Hollywood dream in her 20s, Bethany built a career from the ground up, earning global recognition on The Real Housewives of New York.
But there's more to this megastar than champagne and red carpets, that's for sure. Philanthropist, entrepreneur, producer, Bethany understands there is more to business than show business, and now she's back on the small screen with her brand new show.
Now, this self-made mega mogul is on the hunt for a second in charge to help run her growing empire. So do you think you would have what it takes to impress Bethany? Let's take a look at her new show.
These projects are designed to put someone to the test.
Where's my video?
You know what? This is a disaster.
Bethany Frankel joins us live now from Connecticut. We've got so much to talk to you about. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
Congrats on this new show. You're a real pro at this TV thing now, but this time around it's your business and your brand. How high are the stakes, do you feel?
It's authentic. It's couldn't be higher stakes because I need to find this person. It's been a need for a while. Now we've created a show around this concept, and this person has to work with me and be with me every day and want to commit to me, and there's a trust. There's a level of trust that needs to be there with someone that you're allowing into your home, into your work, around my daughter. So it's very important to me. My life is personal and business is very intertwined. So it becomes more important than just walking into an office and interfacing with someone.
What are you like as a boss? We saw just a little glimpse then. You seem pretty tough.
I'm pretty tough. I'm intense. I am always ahead of everyone else in... I'm just on top of it. I don't drop balls. I don't procrastinate. I'm on top of things. So you need to try to keep up, which is the most challenging part. I am tough but fair. I let people do their own thing, meaning it doesn't matter if you're on the phone. It doesn't matter if you work from home or in the office or what you're doing on your own time. I'm not looking at people's 9 to 5 or punching them into and out of a clock. They have to just get their work done. But by no means am I sugarcoating it, and by no means is it easy. I would never, ever misrepresent that.
Now, can we just talk girl stuff? Your wardrobe from this series is making headlines. I just saw a whole sequin outfit. It looked awesome. So your boss lady looks are quite incredible. Do you get to keep these styles, or is this from your own wardrobe?
This is all from my own closet. All of it's my own closet. I worked with a woman who just came over to help me organize and shop my own closet. But I think it is important that the show is truthful. And yeah, all of this stuff is in my closet. Most of it is from past seasons. A lot of it's on sale. I don't shop for the moment. I just sort of buy things that I like and I keep them in my closet until there's a moment for them to make an appearance. So I'm not precious about fashion in that way. And I've gotten much leaner during the pandemic. I really only like to keep what's really good, but I'm not caught up in trends or what's in or what everyone's doing or wearing. I just like what feels good.
Okay. Now, we have spent hours and hours trawling through your Instagram. We found some great throwbacks. Talk us through. What was your first job?
My first job, I worked at a bakery in high school in order to be able to pay for a party that I wanted to have at my house. I worked at a clothing store in Manhattan. I worked as a cocktail waitress in Boston. I've worked as a hostess at in Beverly Hills, where I ended up meeting Paris and Nikki Hilton's mom, and I ended up babysitting and nannying them and working for her. I met Kyle from the Beverly Hills Housewives there. I met the woman who would get me the job working for Linda and Jerry Bruckheimer, the big movie producer, and his successful wife. So I have had a lot of different jobs. Personal assistant, I've produced events for Lorne Michaels, and I've been an assistant. I've done everything I've done is more intense than what I'm asking these people to do. I can say that. I will never ask an assistant to do what I have and had to do. So I know from that side what it is.
Yeah. When you're not filming, you've got a relief organisation, and that's called Be Strong. You actually played a hand in COVID relief efforts. How is it in the US at the moment for you? You're in Connecticut. We can see that. How are things there now for you?
Well, our entry point was into PPE, and I didn't expect to get this deeply involved, but we ended up distributing more than $20 million in PPE nationwide to fire stations, police departments, governments in all 50 states in the United States. We have now reached $100 million in worldwide aid, and we were very involved in the Australia fires and the California fires. We've been to Puerto Rico many times with planes going in and out. I think it's 53 planes going in and 53 planes out with distraught passengers and barges and cargo ships. And we've basically been around the world doing disaster relief. So it's been amazing, but we definitely touched Australia.
Yeah. Okay, now you're helping the nation. You have your own show in which you hire and fire people. We know at least of one other person who did the same and ended up in the big leather chair in the White House. Politics for you in the future. Any thoughts?
I really don't think that I would be good at politics. I am very rogue. I don't love playing by rules. Often when we're having to deal with governments and bureaucracy, we can't get anything done in the relief world. Maybe that is not the way it is in politics. I don't actually know. But I don't like the blame game, and that seems like politics is a lot of the blame game. And this is not a joke. I'm really in pajamas 95% of my life, and I don't think that would work in the political landscape. So I just don't think that I would actually be great at it. I had an ex that told me, you should run for mayor of New York because the subways would never be running more smoothly. Like, I could do the job. But I don't know that it would be good for me, or I don't want to be focused on how much people like me or don't like me. That's why I'm able to be this way on the show. You know, Donald Trump, you know, made it like he's all knowing and perfect and he never has any flaws in his life or in his business during that show, whereas I'm showing that I'm imperfect, my business isn't perfect, and we need this. So yeah, it's just I'm a little more of a flawed character.
Well, we understand the current president spends about 95% of his time in pajamas anyway, so you're still in the running as far as we're concerned. Great to see you this morning. Thanks for joining us.
You can stream The Big Shot with Bethany on Hey You now.
It's a huge day for one of our dear friends, Delta Goodrum,
because
she has just released her brand new album called Bridge Over Troubled Dreams, featuring the singles Billionaire and Solid Gold.
Now, while every album is a personal journey for an artist, for this new project, Delta is taking us inside the music, releasing her first ever book, which reveals a side to the singer that we have never seen before. And Delta Goodrum joins us live. Hello.
Hello.
What a big
happy
day.
Happy album day.
Yeah,
what a
amazing
big day. This is your sixth album, but the first ever book.
Mm. It is, yes.
Take us inside what that's all about.
While I was writing the record at the piano, in this kind of moment of saying, I'm not going to go to the computer, I just want it to be about the instrument, I'm going to sit here until my fingers continue to play everything, dance on the piano, and even if it's just solitary confinement, staying here, playing. And as I was sitting there and I had my co-writers, Marla or Matt, we sat there and would talk, and I'd share all these stories because I decided to go back to the very start. Mm. And as the stories would start to evolve and I'd share them, I thought, I've never shared these. We started to write them down with the song. So you'd say a concept of the song, a chapter of life, and then I thought, well, after all these years of sharing things with people, it'd be nice to go deeper and have a record that kind of went into lessons learned.
I mean, typically singer-songwriters like to have a bit of mystery around their music, and the interpretation is via the listener.
For sure.
How important was it, I guess, to tell these stories behind the words?
For sure. I think that and once music is out there, it really is somebody else's. Like, yeah, it's my album that I'm so proud of it and written from my heart. But then when it goes out into the world, you hope that it comes a piece of their heart. But in order to have that truthfulness and get to those core feelings, and this album was just a lot more literal. I kind of just wanted to be transparent about it. I'm quite a metaphorical writer in general. I love the mystery. I love the fantasy. I love creating on a tour. I love the sort of magic of what you can create in sound and vision. But this one, I wanted to add that tactile energy of a book that felt like you were taking home an album booklet, like the CD.
Yeah, that's
how cool. Many did you sign?
That's oh my god! Thank you for asking, because
production line.
It was a lot. There was hours and hours. I think we were. It was like 8,000. We only on one day could we get through, you know, I think it was 4 or 5, but we were a team. We had the tunes pumping.
Wow. So, there's past relationships. There's the paralysis you had with your tongue.
Yes, yes.
Relationship with Elton John.
Yes, yep.
What's the one that people will be most surprised to hear, do you think?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, a lot of people have been bringing up the Dear Elton chapter, which is obviously the song on the record, that it was really a reflection of my love with music and Elton John being one of the very first artists that reached out to me as a young artist and gave me that encouragement. And I think that that's been something people have been asking me about, but that's beautiful, and he's a piano master. Crash has definitely been a conversation, but I think that when you go in, you dive into it, there's something for everyone. There's really lighthearted moments. There's talking about, you know, all of my friends talking about the relationship of work balance and home and jumping countries. And then I think about Kill Them With Kindness, talking about what it is to go viral or experience, to have those moments of what do you do in these scenarios. So I kind of loved diving into all the different aspects. Yeah. Obviously, Paralyzed is a deep dive into the reset and where this record came from. But
The fear of not coming back, I would imagine.
For sure. You know, it was a really, a unique moment in time. But I know a lot of people go through communication challenges and... I always remind myself when that video went out there and people started sharing their stories, how important it is to have shared experiences again.
Okay. So, Dil, as this new album and book gets a little personal, we wanted to get even more personal. Because, you know, a whole book about your life isn't enough.
At least you know there's more to learn. You know, we've got so many layers. Yeah,
this is a little game we like to call...
Oh, wow! Look at those photos! Oh my god!
Yes. Okay. So that was Larry and I as teenagers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You guys are amazing.
You've got to show us some of your teenage photos before we
can.
Get
we do
to,
that at the end?
I bet you they're kind of really good.
This is about
good.
Delta.
We'll have a look at Matt's.
Have you got the men's teenage?
Just a bit.
Oh, of course you're like really cool.
Oh,
nice.
Smouldering. Oh, there you go. That was the family shot.
The leather one reminds me of when you're running. Like, it has that,
I used to wear that one.
It's still cute. This is how the game works, Delta. We're going back in time, back to when you were a teenager, to find out what a young teenager, Delta.
Well, I was a teenager on innocent eyes, but yes.
Here's the first one. Who was your first celebrity crush?
The truth is, it was the movie Casper, when he turned into the human at the end, Devon Sawa. That's my very first crush, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Yeah, the Can I Keep You?
I'm going to have to go back and have another look.
At the end, he turns into the person. It's very romantic.
Okay,
very
beautiful.
Sweet.
Perfume, signature scent. Did you have one?
Look, I think it was the 90s and Impulse was the thing that most people were...
All over?
Yes. In your school bag? In the school bag?
Yes, at school, for sure. I had Spice Girl lunchboxes and Silverchair pencil cases or something I had. I wrote Daniel Johns' name on some of them.
Wow. Did you ever have were you a poster on the wall kind of girl or not?
No, and I'll turn all... I actually had the... Well... I wasn't really a poster person on the wall, but maybe when I opened my cupboard, I started to a bit later, but no, I didn't have posters.
What was on there?
Well, when I signed to Sony when I was 15, I put the ARIA chart on my wall and whited out number one, and I wrote my name in there. That was my, really? Yeah, serious. Oh, I was 15 years old, so yes, I had like the Romeo and Juliet. That was the only other poster I remember I had when I opened the cupboard, but no, I had the visualizing the Aria charts.
You were like, that was a mood board right before mood boards were a thing.
I put up the album and single chart, and I wrote my name.
Do you remember what the album was? You white it out?
I don't know. I was just thinking that as I said that. But I do remember, because my very, very, very first song when I had, I was like 15, it went to like number 62 or something. And I remember thinking, it's okay. It's all right. Hold on. I can still see it. We can do it.
It's still not bad.
Any awkward dates?
Dates? When I was a teenager?
Yes.
I wasn't really dating. I was like, you know, sports and music. I was a really sporty girl, and I joined Neighbours by the time I was 16, and then we had the songs when I was 17.
Wow. Too busy.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Were you good at music at school? Were you like?
I was really, school. I liked to entertain. I had a lot of fun. Like, you know, I think they were happy that I went to Erinsborough High as my high school. But no, I loved my school. I went to Hills Grammar, and yeah, I had a great school. My friends are still my mates today. Hi, wow, guys.
It's gorgeous.
Hi, Jack. So good. Hi, yeah. Man.
Thank you so much for joining us, and all the best with the album and the book and the tour coming up later on as well.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, for the past 2 years, model and presenter Fiona Faulkner has been dreaming of becoming a mum. With her fiancé, Hayley, by her side, the two embarked on an IVF journey, sharing their personal struggles with thousands online.
But it was all worth the wait because the star couple welcomed their son, Hunter, 7 weeks ago. Now, having just flown in from meeting his grandparents for the very first time, Fiona and Hayley want all of you to meet their beautiful baby boy, too. Drum roll, please. Here are you, Fiona Hayley, and the star of the show, Hunter, ready for his close-up, joins us now. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Hi, Hunter. 7 weeks old.
He is. He's our little bundle of joy.
Can you believe it? How are you going?
Yeah, good. A little bit sleep deprived. Yeah. We made it here in one piece. Yeah. Just.
Whether he'll stay quiet or not, that's another question. But
you've got clothes on.
You're going well. You're really lucky.
You're lucky we got here.
100% hiding vomit on my shirt.
All parents do. It's been quite the journey, Fiona. Take us through it.
It has. It was a great. We went through IVF, and that took a few goes, and now we've got our beautiful bundle, but you know, it's worth every minute, every needle, everything to have him here, definitely.
Hayley, I think you summed it up nicely on your Insta. You said, for 2 years you were a dream, over 9 months we watched you grow, and in a second you stole our hearts.
Yeah, it's so true, because it's such a tough and grueling journey that you go on through. It's a roller coaster. You have highs, you have lows, and this one here, like, she was just such a warrior through it all. She, you know, through all the needles, through all the... Are you getting a bit teary, love?
No, not at all.
Yeah, but it's just... And for all people going through IVF, it's a roller coaster journey, but then the second you see them and...
Oh, that moment he was put on me, I literally... It's not something I've never, ever felt before. Seeing him for the first time was like...
It's a different love.
Beautiful thing I've ever experienced.
You still get emotional. Like,
I do. The second I think about it, we actually recorded it, and every time I watch it back or show someone, I like start crying.
So empowering, though, showing us your journey and taking us through the highs and lows. You visited your mum in Victoria recently. She's just been moved into permanent aged care for Alzheimer's. How special was that moment to introduce Hunter to her?
It was really beautiful. We got to go home and spend her last Mother's Day at home with her, which was really nice. And she has gone into care now, which it's best for her and for my dad. It's, you know, he's been her carer for the last couple of years, and it's... Yeah, she's where she needs to be. But it was a beautiful time for her to meet him, and it really brought her back to us whenever she interacted with Hunter, which was beautiful.
Yeah.
We Hayley, we know the two of you, you have a podcast together. What the IVF?
What the IVF? Yes.
On it, you shared that you were planning a second baby.
Mm. Yeah.
And now it might be your turn to carry next.
Yeah, look, we've always been keen to have at least two, possibly three, and I guess the perks of being in a same-sex relationship, we get to share the load a bit. So
your turn.
I'll be going second and probably start trying at the end of this year.
After our wedding, yeah.
After the wedding, because we figure just get the sleepless nights out of the way as fast as we can. But and get this little one a sibling, which would be nice. But we're really excited. You just don't know what your journey is going to involve. It could be really hard. I could fall first time. It's just the unknown. But I'm excited to start, and I can't wait to grow this little family of ours.
Oh, it's amazing, guys. Fiona, you've spoken about, I mean, we've tracked your fitness journey from the very beginning right through to now, but you've spoken about the pressures of bouncing back after giving birth. Do you feel that?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of pressure for women after they give birth to bounce back. And I think, you know, some women can, some women do. I obviously haven't. But I think the focus should be definitely not so much on bouncing back, but on just taking care of yourself, looking after yourself. Mm. And that's 100% what I'm all about now. It's just taking it nice and slow
enjoying it. What do you mean? What do you mean you haven't? He's 7 weeks old.
I know.
I know. No, I've got photo. I still can look like I'm pregnant. Like, I just want to share that with other women to show them that it's normal to still kind of look pregnant after you give birth. Sure. Like, that's perfectly normal.
Absolutely.
Like, we have just given birth to these beautiful little bundles of joy. And so I've just sort of shared that.
And I think, like, I saw Fee struggle straight after just looking at her body with a different set of eyes, and I was like, babe, you just gave birth. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, 2 weeks ago you looked at your body with so much love because you were carrying this one. And then just because you've had him, you're looking at yourself with, you know, like, hard eyes. And I was like, you've just gone through them.
Yeah, helped me realise, like, it's okay.
It's okay.
You've just given birth, so.
I'm like, you're not going to bounce back.
1,000%.
Yeah.
Having said that, what about returning to work?
Well, I have some really exciting news. I've just become the ambassador for the Healthy Mummy, which I'm really excited to start my journey to just focusing on health and fitness. Like, I've never been someone that it's about the numbers on the scale, ever. It's more about just getting fit and strong again for this little one and get.
So what is the Healthy Mummy? What is that?
Oh, the Healthy Mummy is an app, and it's, you know, there's beautiful, beautiful meals. Like, we just cooked one last night.
Oh, that's so good, actually.
The recipes are amazing. There's a massive support network online, groups with other mummies.
Yeah.
There's fitness, there's health, there's mindset, there's
at home training, all that kind of thing. It's perfect for
and Hayley's actually going to jump on with the Healthy Mummy
and do it
with me. I guess we've got our wedding coming up in October, so we will both be Healthy Mummies
Can we look at this? Oh, I got
so
it from my mummers.
Yeah, you did.
Obviously, Hayley is the one who dresses him.
I mean, who doesn't like dressing a mini human in cute clothes?
You guys are amazing. We've enjoyed so much your journey so far and can't wait to see the future.
Thank you so much for having us.
And what a perfect little man.
Oh, you behaved so well, Bubby.
He was on telly and he was just an angel.
Waved to Poppy and
Better
Nana.
Than some of those Sydney Swans debutantes.
Yeah.
Well, since Home and Away's inception back in 1988, our mate Alf has been the rock the town needs. But as time has gone on, his duties within Summer Bay House have changed. And now, believe it or not, Alf is a grandfather.
For the past 4 years, we've been keeping up with the extended Stewart family following the introduction of grandson Ryder. And as we suspected, these two are just as close off screen as they are on.
Raymar and Lucas Radovich join us now. Welcome, guys. Good to see you both.
Thank you.
Congratulations. This is good. Home and Away has been immortalised on a coin. Ray, this is the best piece of memorabilia in the history of Summer Bay.
Well, it's certainly the biggest thing since the hamburger phone. You know, we had a phone. Certainly the biggest thing since then, Larry,
It's great to have your workplace recognised like this, Lucas.
Yeah,
right?
I know, absolutely. And I mean, it doesn't really fit in my pocket, but it's a pretty fantastic coin.
So this is what it looks like.
Wow.
Wow, take us through it.
Yeah, so we've got the lovely Palm Beach in the background with the iconic lighthouse, the Stewart Lighthouse, and the beach there, some water.
Summer Bay, drawn in the sand.
Yes, that's right.
I'm not sure. That wouldn't even fit. It wouldn't fit in my pocket.
No,
I don't. It wouldn't fit in the ashtray.
Larry, the real one will fit in your pocket.
Yeah. Oh, I see.
This is just to give you the
and
idea.
Is this minted from all your melted down logies?
This is going into circulation, right? This isn't just some sort of souvenir memorabilia coin. It's actually a fed income.
Correct, Kyle.
Use it to buy an ice cream with.
Well, you could.
Half an ice cream.
Yeah, quarter of an ice cream.
If you go into the an Australia Post near you, any one of the 3,500 Australian Post shops out there, buy something and you could get one of these in your change. As well as our dollar coin, the home and away one, there's things like Victor lawnmowers, Akubra hats, Milo, you name it. There's a whole 26 of them.
The time we did the morning show Balinese rupiah. Do you remember that?
Yes, worth nothing.
Lucas, on home and away, Alf is your grandpa, of course.
Yes.
We know the show is all about family. When the cameras aren't rolling, is he helping you out with stuff? Is he your typical grandfather figure, or is that just when the red light's on?
Well, I think you could answer that question.
Obviously, I help him with nothing.
No, he's honestly fantastic. I mean, well, I've been on the show for about four years now, something like that. And on and off screen, he's always been very supportive. Yeah. And he's always someone that I can come to if I have questions about anything, really. But he probably knows a lot more about life, about everything, really. Yeah, that's right.
I'm a world authority on those things.
Except probably cryptocurrency. I reckon, Lucas, you probably know more about cryptocurrency than Alf, right?
Probably.
That's because you're experienced.
Yes.
Right.
You mean old?
No, experienced, because we can prove it. We went back through the archives. We found some old TV commercials of yours. Let's check it out. This one is for Goodyear tyres, circa 1983.
My God. At Goodyear Tyre and Brake Service, we've got to reduce our stockpile of new Goodyear tyres. So right through January, with every tyre that you trade in, we'll give you a giant $5. That's our giant January tyre trade-in.
You sound like Roger Kempson.
1983. I don't think I was paid for that.
I don't think I was born for that.
I don't think I should have been paid for that.
You've got a real big thing for big currency. Look, it's been following you around your whole life. We've got another one here. We also have a screen grab. This is one that you did for Continental Soup. We've just got a screenshot of this. This is you. Looks a bit like Joel Jackson, actually.
I remember that one.
You had a beard.
It was shot in Tasmania. We had a great time. Yeah, really good.
Love it. Lucas, a couple of former Home and Away stars are back in Australia at the moment. Chris Hemsworth, Isla Fisher. Are they, you think they expect to see them around the bay looking for a coffee maybe?
Yeah, they've been calling me up saying, we should hang out,
Come to our white party.
Yeah, that's right.
Bring the coin.
And I missed that memo.
They're obviously both struggling a bit. They'll be back shortly.
They need the coin.
Yeah.
Big coin.
You've worked with all of them, right? Is there a sense of pride? You see the actors go out, do their thing on the world stage?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, how do you say this? It's really nice when the nice ones kick goals. And Isla and Chris are two of the nicest, so it's absolutely fabulous to see them doing so well.
What makes you more prouder of? Is it seeing Chris Hemsworth on Thor or seeing the Goodyear commercial?
More prouder. Gee, that's a big one. That's a hard one. I think I'm more prouder of seeing Chris Hemsworth as Thor.
All right.
So, Lucas, in the Bay, your character Ryder is growing up. He has a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
Alf intervenes somewhat. What can we expect to see? What happens?
Yes, well, so we've been conjuring up a new business plan because Alf has been telling Ryder that he has no direction in his life, which is most likely true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he always likes to make sure that we're all in line and doing things. But, so me and my girlfriend have come up with a great idea of a food truck, which is fantastic for me because I'm obsessed with food and tacos especially. So this was a very fun storyline to do.
Ah, terrific. Well, it's always great to see you guys in here, and always we like to pay our guests now when they come in. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for coming in.
Good to see you. 50 cents each?
Yes.
Fabulous.
Yes, don't spend it all at once, Ryder. Yeah.
That's probably about what we were.
Yeah, I think so. Good to see you guys.
Thank you very much for having us.
Congratulations on the coin. A morning show one coming soon, I understand.
Absolutely.
Yes, the trippins. Thanks, guys. Well, in Australia, almost one in every 10 babies are born prematurely. That is, before 37 weeks gestation. Well, thanks to medical advances, more than 90% survive and most go on to develop normally. But there isn't always a happy ending.
In 2006, Sophie Smith lost her premature triplets. Henry, who was born at 21 weeks, lived for one precious hour. Evan and Jasper were born 3 weeks later. Devastatingly, Evan lost his life after 10 days when he suffered from a brain hemorrhage. His brother Jasper held on for an incredible 58 days before his little lungs collapsed.
From heartbreak to helping other families, Sophie started Running for Premature Babies, raising millions and helping thousands. Her charity recently welcomed a new ambassador, none other than Purple Wiggle Lockie Gillespie, whose own twin girls, Lottie and Lulu, were born prematurely just last year.
And we welcome Sophie Smith, the founder of Running for Premature Babies and Purple Wiggle Lockie Gillespie. Sophie, gosh, that's so hard to even read. It's such a devastating story that you've lived through. Take us back to 2006.
Thank you. Well, obviously losing our boys was absolutely life-shattering and heartbreaking, but we also experienced the greatest joy and the most beautiful and precious moments with each of them, and that's what I like to remember. I treasure every moment we spent together and every experience of being their mum.
Amazing.
Your strength is incredible. Lockie, your twin girls are now giggly and cheeky, 8 months old, but they did spend a couple of days in neonatal unit. Frightening time for any parent, right?
Yeah, it was, and we did a hospital visit with Sophie the other week, and just to see how much has advanced, how much equipment's there for these children. Our girls had little feeding tubes for a few days and that was it, so nothing like what some of these babies are facing. But the equipment now is so fantastic, and thanks to Sophie, it's throughout the hospital wards. It's incredible.
Amazing.
Sophie, tell me how you got the idea for the charity. I mean, I imagine running would have been something that you needed for your mental health, but how did you come up with the idea?
Well, it was when our boys were in hospital and we actually realised that so much of the equipment that was keeping them alive had been donated and that the hospital relies on fundraising for a lot of their equipment. So we decided to run a half marathon to raise $20,000 for one humidifier for the hospital. And then I needed some people to run with me, so I set out to find people to join us. And it kind of took off from there. Now, 15 years later, we've had over 5,000 people run for our cause. $4 million has been raised, and we've directly benefited about 6,000 babies from right around the country.
Beautiful stuff. Sophie, we're making huge advances in this area. How do the survival rates compare now to, you know, let's say 15 years ago?
Well, when my boys were born at 24 weeks 15 years ago, they had a 50% chance of survival. Mm. And today, a baby born at the same gestation has a 75% chance, which is just amazing, you know, in that short time. But these advances have been made possible due to research into the care of premature babies and also advanced technology of neonatal equipment. And our charity, I'm very proud, has been able to fund both research and equipment.
So, Lockie, as a new dad, how important is this message of hope for you?
Oh, it's everything for parents and it's everything for anyone. But the ward was just full of, it was full of babies, but it was full of equipment. And it's so nice to know that, you know, parents who are going through knowing that their babies are going to come prematurely are so much more likely to be yes. Okay.
Yeah. Sophie, you did go on to have two more sons, Owen and Harvey, but tragically you lost your husband Ash in 2016 from brain cancer, right? You're such a beacon of light and positivity and inspiration and motivation for everyone who meets you. Where do you get that inner strength from?
Well, Ash was diagnosed with brain cancer when our fourth son, Owen, was just 6 months old. And he faced his illness with so much courage. He never gave up, and he actually outlived his prognosis by 6 years. And in that time, we had another son, Harvey. I think that I've learned that even in the very darkest times, there is always light and there's always hope. Today I have two beautiful boys who are 10 and 12, and our charity's growing and more people are running with us, and we're able to support more hospitals than we ever have before. So there's just so much more to do.
Yeah. Oh, I'm literally getting goosebumps listening to you. Your strength is incredible. Now, Lockie, you like dance and jump and spin around on stage in this snazzy outfit. How are you going to go running?
Well, I've said to Sophie this morning, the best part is that it's not just half marathons or marathons. There's fun runs. There's 5Ks. I'm going to start with a 5.
Oh, I like this. That's sensible. You can ease your way into
it. A fun run. Yeah, there's events for everybody. And the best part is you can wear purple, wear the running for premature baby singlet and get out there and have a fun day.
You're going to run or in big red car?
No, I'm definitely going to run.
Sophie, you originally set out to raise $20,000, as you've said. You've since smashed that target. We're talking $4 million. Where do you go to from here?
Well, currently we're looking for people to join us in all and fun runs in Adelaide, Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast, Brisbane and Sydney. Mm-hmm. We've also got our own virtual marathon in November, which is a marathon open to people of all fitness abilities, because you sign up to complete the 42Ks either in a day or over a week or even over the entire month of November. And so we're hoping to get loads of people involved in that. And everyone who raises $50 for our cause will receive a special finisher's medal.
Someday sitting on this couch, I just feel very blessed that we've met someone incredible. You are absolutely incredible. And thanks for coming in today and sharing your story. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.
Such a good cause. Thanks, guys. Now, for more information about Sophie's charity, it's called Running for Premature Babies. Just head across to the Morning Show website.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Back in 2019, there were 5 drug-induced deaths every day in Australia. This was the 5th year in a row where the number of fatalities is higher than the previous peak in the late 90s.
Now, according to the National Drug and Alcohol Research Centre, opioids were the main substance linked to these deaths, with more than 1,000 fatalities. Now, this led to new rules being introduced last year, aiming to curb hospital admissions and loss of life.
So today, we're shining a spotlight on opioid addiction, explaining the risks, red flags and the road to recovery.
And we welcome addiction specialist Dr. Mark Hardy back to the studio. Hi, Mark. Nice to see you. Okay, for people who may not know what we're talking about, when we say opioids, what do we mean?
So opioids actually a generation of chemicals that originally came from the opium poppy, and so were naturally occurring products. But over time, we've also been able to generate some synthetic opioids, and some of them are quite powerful. Mm-hmm. Opioids themselves are very good for pain relief. They obviously have a role in emergencies, in surgeries, in anaesthesia. But if they're used daily, every single day, then the power sort of wears off and you need to take more and more in order to get the same sort of result. And this is where there's a potential for people to become addicted to them.
Some experts say that you can become addicted within 2 weeks. Is that true?
Well, that's not unrealistic. In people who have a family history of addiction or have had a personal history of addiction to other substances, we see addiction to these substances within a month. Mm. And so I would heed the 2 week warning very, very closely.
Okay, walk us through the signs of addiction. So what does it look like if someone's looking?
So there are some key signs that we look for addiction. Using a substance for longer than intended would be one of them, and at higher doses, and that would indicate tolerance. Mm. People who become sick when the medication wears off and they can't get any more, things like with opioids, sweats, anxiety, insomnia, cramps, diarrhea, they're very common signs, so withdrawal. Mm. And of course, these other behaviours that people engage in to promote the status quo, so using more than they should for longer, seeing more than one doctor, going to more than one pharmacy, these sorts of behaviours are potentially yellow and red flags for addiction.
We've been talking about numbers from 2019. The government intervened last year with new rules, opioid packaging sizes halved, also management through the doctor via review of prescription more regularly. Are these working?
Well, we're seeing people come for referrals for coming off these sorts of medications more and more. So at least in an anecdotal sense, I believe that there is some change and some shift happening here. Mm. It's a little early to say in a statistical sense, because these statistics are year to year from financial year to financial year. So we haven't seen the 20 to 21 figures yet, but they'll be very, very carefully watched. And I think we may see some drops over the next year or two. Mm. I'm concerned that unfortunately PBS figures don't always pick up private prescriptions and other ways that people can obtain them. So I guess it's a watch this space scene, but I certainly have seen in the practice of addiction medicine more people coming, hoping to come off opioids with our help.
Mm. A lot of people with legitimate pain don't abuse medication. So are these tighter regulations hurting them? Or is that just the price we've got to pay to tighten this stuff up?
Obviously, the problems with using opioids in the wrong way is confined to a small group of people. However, it's not necessarily that even healthy individuals with no mental health problems are going to be able to get off scot-free with addiction when it comes to opioids. So the rules have been made across the board that people need to benefit from them and that they need to demonstrate that these treatments have some use for them in order to continue taking them. Mm. The issue here is that these people have had very little notice to come off their opioids, and some doctors are now hesitant to prescribe them given these sort of overarching rules that have been placed around opioids. So they've been, and I empathise with them, left a little bit in the cold with this, and they're seeking alternative treatments, some of which don't have necessarily the greatest evidence yet for benefit. What we want to do if we're going to use other treatments such as deep brain stimulation or medicinal cannabis or any of the other sort of novel treatments that people are proposing in place of this, we need evidentiary benefit to be proved before we can say that we should be using these treatments. We don't want to have the same situation occur next year where another treatment's pulled out from under people's feet because it's not appropriate for them or we can't prove that it works.
Doctor, sometimes it's unavoidable. Can you give us some alleviating concern and safe use guidelines, how to best manage this?
So I think obviously you need to think about the context for the treatment. Obviously post-surgery is a classic treatment paradigm where you'd want to use an opioid, particularly if it was painful orthopaedic surgery on a joint such as the ankle or the knee or even the hip.
But okay, with an 18-year-old son who's just had ankle surgery two days ago.
Yeah, so
yeah, he's in a lot of pain.
It's appropriate for opioids in the short term after treatment such as that, and also to, as an aid if physiotherapy is going to be painful to use these treatments.
But having said that, he 20 tablets and we're being really careful with them and there's no repeats and that's the way it's got to be.
So I think that's the other essence here that needs to be obeyed is that the people need to set time limits and they need to be prepared to stick to them. You need to make a contract with your doctor, ask lots of questions, be prepared to have that conversation around the potential for addiction and say, well, we need a stop date. And when that date comes, you need to have prepared for it, brought your doses down and be prepared to step off them. Otherwise, the scripts can roll on. And it's quite innocuous with prescription medication because it can happen right under your nose.
Yeah, you need the doctors to be very strong right in the first instance. Thank you so much. It's a huge topic affecting a lot of people. Thanks, Mark.
And that's it for another episode of the Morning Show podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Remember to hit that subscribe button if you haven't already. You can find out more info on our website at themorningshow.com.au and you can tune in for more Morning Show fun. That's weekdays after sunrise on Channel 7.